In the criminal justice system, the people are represented by two separate yet equally important groups, the police who investigate crime and the district attorneys who prosecute the offenders. These are their stories.
It took them a while, always after you got hurt with an injury, to get back. And the Laker organization knew that about him. And Andrew is not, he takes the summers off. He's not a gym rat.
I could ask you a question. Would you sign Andrew Bryant after this year?
Maybe 1 year.
He should be paid year to year until people know if his knees are all right. I mean, when you miss an entire season, that's a real thing. That's not like, oh, I'm out for 20 games. Like, you're out for a season with knees, you're 25, you're that big.
All rise, and welcome to another episode of Basketball Court. And welcome inside the U.S. District Court for the District of Basketball. I am Judge Peter Andrews, where once again we will litigate some of the great what-ifs in NBA history. I think we got a good one for you tonight here in Basketball Court. Remember, there are many basketball courts in this country. There's only one basketball court. And now, having said the phrase basketball court as many times as one person can in 30 seconds, let me introduce our co-counsel. First up, sitting inside my kitchen, it's Miles Johnson. Miles, how you doing?
What a nice kitchen it is. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good. We actually, it's, there's like a kitchen and then there's like a little like square off the side of the kitchen. We are crammed in here.
It's alcove is the real estate term for that, I think.
It looks nice on Skype.
it's a good thing we have a realtor on the show. Anyway, and then our returning champion, having one last time by invoking the name of Lil B himself, it's Sam Tidings. Sam, how's it going?
Happy to be here, as always, to defend my title.
No, that's what's important. I actually mailed a belt to Sam this time. it's pretty gaudy, I would say.
I'm wearing a belt, but it's a different belt.
Why aren't you? You're not going to wear your belt for the podcast recording?
I don't wear it to work, and I just got back from work, so no.
I mean, I really think you should wear it to work, right? What's the point otherwise?
How else are people going to know what you're best known for?
I tried explaining this podcast to someone from work the other day, and I just felt so much secondhand embarrassment. I almost considered just, like, quitting the Google group and, like, never doing this again.
Well, unfortunately for you, we are going to keep doing it. Before we get into it, I do want to remind everyone to, if you're listening this the first time, make sure you subscribe on iTunes. If you're one of our regular listeners, I think you should go leave a review on iTunes. That, I guess, I think it helps. I don't really know.
You can literally say whatever you want to. Yeah, it doesn't even you can leave 5 stars and tell us it's a terrible podcast. That's fine too. So just whatever comes to your mind, speak from your heart if you want to, or not. Leave us lots of funny different emojis. Just, you know, whatever it is that you want to do is what I'm stressing is important here.
Well, and all right, so I do want to. I did get one in person review from someone this past week who said, you know, they like the show, but they think there's too much banter at the beginning. So enough banter.
Well, I guess we'll stop talking then.
Banter stops. Time for the podcast this week. The process. That's right, the process. The process, which of course refers to the Philadelphia 76ers, you know, people say it began with Sam Hinkie, but really the inciting event that set in motion the process, along with the fates of the Lakers, of Dwight Howard, of Andre Iguodala, of so many people, was the Bynum trade. And we call it the Bynum trade despite the fact that Dwight Howard and Andre Iguodala were the two best players in it, and Nick Vukovic was the third best player. So we're going to go back to the 2012 Andrew Bynum trade, which happened before the 2012-13 season. We're going to undo it and see what happens. And just as a reminder before we get started, here is the trade. It is a four-way trade. The Lakers are the ones really making the move. They want Dwight Howard and Earl Clark, and then they also get Chris Duhon from the Magic. The Magic get Nick Vukovic from the Sixers, Aaron Aflalo. Aflalo.
That's the guy who swung on Bielitsa.
Oh, yeah?
A week and a half or 2 weeks ago.
Don't sleep.
He totally missed, but he swung on him with a lot of... he really made the swing count. He just didn't connect.
Peter, you weren't jealous of Aaron Aflalo growing up?
Oh, goodness. Just ignore him. It's fine. Just keep going.
Al Harrington, Mo Harkless from the Sixers, and 3 first-round draft picks, the Nuggets, Sixers, and the Lakers. Meanwhile, the Nuggets got Andre Iguodala from the Sixers to make it all work, and the Sixers, in what was hailed as a franchise-changing move, acquired Andrew Bynum from the Lakers and Jason Richardson from the Magic. Andrew Bynum never played a game for the Sixers. So,
never played a basketball game.
Yes, he did bowl. He played many games.
He was a great bowler.
All right, so let's start with Miles. Miles, you are up first because I've decided you are. Let's hear what you have to say.
Okay, cool. So I think the biggest thing to start off with is that the Sixers were actually good. I think that's the most important thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about this from the beginning, is that they weren't bad. They weren't a bad basketball team when this starts. And so technically, the process doesn't technically take place until Bynum is found out that he's never going to be able to play with the Sixers because he never ends up being healthy. But assuming that he was healthy and even was just a shell of who he was in LA, like, this team I think still could have been competitive. They were the third best defensive team, both in terms of points per game and in terms of defensive rating the summer before the trade, and finished 4 games above 500 in the lockout year. And that was the same Sixers team that took that Boston team to 7 games in the second round after upsetting Chicago in the first round. That was the year that Derrick Rose went down with his... I think that was the first... Was that the first Derrick Rose injury?
Yeah. Because the Sixers were not supposed to win that series.
They were not, right. It was totally an upset. So, I think for the short term, if this trade doesn't go down, the Sixers are actually better in terms of just on-the-floor product. I think that if it doesn't go down, after they draft Mo Harkless, which would have been the draft right before this, because this trade takes place in August, so this is the June beforehand. I think what happens, though, is that in that same draft, the Sixers send Andre Iguodala and the rights to Mo Harkless, who they would have been drafting, to the Warriors, and I have them sending them to the Warriors for the 7 overall pick in that draft, which I think the Sixers would have had the Warriors select Andre Drummond. Somebody who can be seen, like, I think as a consolation prize, because again, Bynum was good when we thought he was good when this trade was about to go down. A lot of people, if you go back and read, were considering him to be, after Dwight Howard, the best center in the NBA. And you go back and think, this was not that long ago that we were considering Andrew Bynum to be like a top 2 center in the league, and now, you know, he's
Sam and I were actually looking up before the show what the last, like, Sam, what'd you say, like, the last Andrew Bynum appearance in our reality was?
2014 with the Pacers. He played 2 games for them before hurting his knee.
So just within the span of about 24 months.
And if you had asked me before this, even after doing the research for this episode, if you had asked me, had Andrew Bynum played for the Pacers, I would have said no. That's how much of a non-factor he ended up becoming. But I think you would have gotten some good value for him when this trade actually went down, and I think it could have come with Andre Drummond. Andre Drummond, after his rookie year, that was the last year that he wouldn't have averaged a double-double in the league, both in points and rebounds. He's led the league in rebounding 2 of the seasons he's been in the league. I think would have been a good fit around the other pieces that the Sixers already have.
So what you're saying is the Sixers have Jrue Holiday, Evan Turner, Nick Vucevic, Andre Drummond. They don't have their draft pick in 2014, which is the pick that... Well, wait, this trade never happened, so they keep that draft pick.
Right, no, so they keep the pick because the trade never goes down, but right. they don't have the pieces that they would have gotten back from the Lakers.
Right,
the
so there's no Embiid.
No. And what's important about the rest of this timeline is all of those, the Embiids, the Jahlil Okafors, all of that doesn't happen. Because what's interesting about actually the last couple episodes we've done is they've been kind of much larger ideas, whether it be the last episode with Steph and kind of the transformation in terms of offensive style that we've seen take place over the league. And this one, I mean, someone's going to make a feature-length film about Sam Hinkie and the Sixers, because this is one of the more unprecedented, I think, just front office strategies we've seen in sports. in a really long time. And I think if that doesn't happen, like, there is no process to be trusted. There is no, you know, tanking. There is no, you know, sort of squeezing the system for all that it's got. This is something that's really unprecedented. So, again, we're doing an episode that is taking something really, really unique and saying that what if it didn't happen. So I think that Holiday, Vucevic, Drummond, Evan Turner is there too, that core. I think you have a team that resembles, or at least the way I was thinking about it, was this year's Pelicans team, maybe? Where you
Because of Jrue Holiday's on them?
Well, I was going to say just because you had a pick and roll combo guard and then two bigs and Vucevic and Drummond kind of anchoring the floor the way that, although, of course, those are not Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins, but, you know, in the same sort of style. And, you know, that team is maybe going to win anywhere from 35 to 40, 36, 42 games every year.
I think if you're a Sixers fan, you don't like this.
Yeah, outcome. No. Again, to be clear, if you're a Sixers fan, and that's what the point, I guess, is that if you were willing to go ahead and trust the process, like, it really did end up the best it possibly could. Like, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, you know, those are two potentially franchise-altering players that you don't get without the extreme tanking. In fact, I have this Sixers team. Their ceiling is like a second-round exit to the Heat in 2014, maybe. You know, they get to a place where they're good and they can contend, but much as, you know, the issue of teams like the Wizards, somebody now, is it's the worst thing to be in basketball is just okay. You either need to be, you know, supremely talented and always contending for a title, like, you know, the Warriors are, like, you know, a team like the Celtics or the Cavs are every year, or you need to be just a bottom feeder that is going to have a chance to rebuild through the draft. The worst thing to be is just kind of middling, and I think that's what this team would have been had this Bynum trade never gone down.
All right, so what happens to the Magic and the Lakers?
So the Magic are stuck with Dwight, at least temporarily. And I have up until that 2012 summer. So it's clear that he doesn't want to be in Orlando still. By this point, if you let Dwight tell it, he has said that he has wanted a trade to Brooklyn, that he and the front office were, you know, totally okay with it, that deal was supposed to go down. It, according to Dwight, mysteriously never goes down. And that's kind of where the dissolution of their relationship sort of falls apart. I think something that could have happened, though, had this trade not have happened, is that the Magic actually send Dwight to Golden State in exchange for Andres Biedrin's, Monte Ellis, and a future first.
So I will just say before we get into this,
yeah,
you shouldn't couch it so much. You are perfectly predicting, like, what happened in the past. This isn't something that could have happened. This is what would have happened. Come on, gotta be a strong advocate for yourself here, Miles.
Well, okay, the reason that I'm, you know, hedging it a little bit is because I'm not someone that necessarily believes Dwight Howard at his word. So the whole, I don't think that this would or wouldn't have happened, like, in terms of the Nets trade as it would have gone down, or did go down, I should say. I don't feel super great about trusting Dwight Howard. So I think, yes, this is what I've written. This is what I think would have happened. But Dwight could also just have been full of garbage and none of what.
Can I object to this trade?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, that's well, I get to make decisions.
Well, yes, sorry. Right, I'm not the judge. But.
So here's my objection. I just think that the fake Golden State return is too light, knowing what the Magic ended up getting. They ended up getting three first-round picks and Vucevic and whatever. They turned down some ridiculous Nets offers, which we'll get to later, like four first-round picks. Why are they just settling for Monte Ellis and a future-protected first-round pick?
Well, don't forget Andres Biedrin's.
Oh, of course.
You're shading Andres Biedrin's here. Yeah, I mean, so I don't think that, and I think this is, again, plays into why I think whether you trust or who you trust when you're looking back at the Dwight trade, because you have to either believe that the Magic turned down, what was it, four first round picks from the Nets, or that Dwight that it was totally his fault, that he was what do I want to say, like, vetoing those trades as they were going down because he didn't want to go to Brooklyn in the way that, to me, it's really confusing to know, like, why it was that Billy King deal didn't go down unless there's something the Magic just never ended up disclosing about why it was they were so cautious about those picks. So I'm saying that this concession trade happens because I think there's some impediment between the Magic being able to get the Brooklyn deal done at all, whether that's from Dwight's side or the Orlando side, whomever. I'm assuming that deal, whatever, because if you're offering four firsts and it still doesn't get done, there's something else there. So I'm assuming that trade is kind of off the table.
Well, and let's be clear, Andres Biedrin's in and of himself is worth four first round draft picks. I looked up.
That's fair. I forgot that.
I was curious because until like 2 minutes ago, I never heard of Andres Biedrin's. And what were his stats in 2011-12? 1.7 points per game.
Here we go.
3.7 total rebounds per game.
Yep.
2.7 personal fouls per game. Nice. He actually started 35 games for that Warriors team. It was a lockout shortened year, so that's a lot of games.
What were his defensive stats?
I would imagine they were bad.
It could have been like the Ben Wallace of the West Coast.
One block and half a steal per game.
Like I said.
Wait, but so like you said, that's why that this wouldn't get done, or like you said that's why. What's like you said?
Oh, that was a joke about Andres Biedrin's being a lockdown interior defender, but I still think that the return is light. But you can go on.
Okay, yeah.
I just wanted noted for the record.
Oh, the record is duly noted.
I don't know how law works.
Now we're on the record, so anything you say, you don't have to add for the record.
And I don't think there's a jury, so there's nothing that needs to be.
We got to add a jury to this.
It's a bench trial.
It is a bench trial. That, no, good use of terminology.
Do I get a point for that?
No.
Okay.
All right, withdrawn. Let's talk Lakers.
Lakers don't get Dwight.
Okay. That makes sense because you just gave Dwight to the Warriors. So.
Right. And I think that with that being said, that there is a bit of a letdown period for them. I have them sending Andrew Bynum to the Hawks for Kirk Heinrich and Josh Smith. So, Sam, if you didn't like the trade before, I think this one is even worse in terms of return for the Lakers. But again, I think, like Orlando, the Lakers were kind of... I mean, these are both teams that are caught kind of between a rock and a hard place. Again, the thing I'll say about Orlando is I can't imagine what deal doesn't get done that includes... I mean, who would you not trade for four first round draft picks in the league like right now? Like other than Kevin Durant, I can't think of anybody else who that would be a non starter for.
I actually think if you're the Warriors, I would trade Kevin Durant for four first round picks.
You trade Kevin Durant for four first?
Yeah, because it gives you a chance to extend that team.
Yeah, longer. I would trade Kevin Durant for four
you're
first.
You're still gonna win with Steph, Clay, and Dre. Yeah.
See, I don't know, but even that, like,
yeah, don't forget JaVale McGee.
That only further underscores my so. Who's not doing that for Dwight Howard in 2012? I'm assuming that deal's not on the table in actuality at all. And I think the one
it was
Golden
a different
State
era
is not
back
a great
then.
One for it was. It was a different era, but
six whole years ago.
and was it enough that it would totally? I don't know. So
actually,
anyway.
I will just stop and say. A joke about being six whole years ago. It is really amazing how quickly the league turns over. I think the NBA of 2012, not just in terms of players, but just the way that teams approach free agency, approach trades, it's unrecognizable.
If Dwight Howard had come into the league in 1999 instead of 2004, like, he would be a god, right? But he's come into this league kind of at this awkward transition period where, how do you go from all of these defensive player of the year accolades, almost winning MVP, going to the finals in 2009, to now bouncing around. He can't. I mean, Charlotte is I guess the best that it's been for him in the last like few teams. But he's been bouncing around team after team. It hasn't worked really anywhere. Anyway, I have Lakers and Andrew Bynum to the Hawks for Kirk Heinrich and Josh Smith. I think the thing about this, the Lakers wanted guards because. I think Steve Blake would have been on the team at this point. They were lacking a guard to play next to Kobe. And originally, before I was informed of the rules of basketball court, I had Chris Paul being a part of this as well. So
different episode.
Look, Chris and Kobe together.
As one of the founding fathers of basketball court, you should know what the rules are.
I mean, that's it. Anyway,
why don't we get to these ancillary effects, because Sam at some point deserves to talk. What are the kind of the big takeaways from this?
Okay, so I have the ones that I have here are ranked. This usually I don't have them ranked because it's just whatever. But biggest to smallest. First of all, there's no process, which means there's no Joel Embiid in the way that we have grown accustomed to him. Not just in terms of on the floor. So I'm a firm believer in, you know, players only reaching their potentials in certain places, and that is partly because of coaching style. That's partly because of the, you know, medical staffs of these front offices, whatever. But also, like, imagine Joel Embiid, you know, having the same personality as now in a place like San Antonio. Like, I think part of the reason that he and the Sixers are such a perfect match is because there's a little bit of quirkiness on both sides. Like, this whole trust the process, whatever it is you even want to call it, phenomenon, like, it fits so perfectly with the personality of this team, and a large part of that is because of Embiid, and I don't think that happens if this trade doesn't go down and if he doesn't get picked specifically by the Sixers.
I can't believe I forgot to wear my Trust the Process t-shirt to tape this.
Yeah, episode. I'm surprised.
All right, so Joel Embiid, sad.
Yeah,
what
no
else?
Joel Embiid. Kevin Durant never goes to the Warriors because he wins his first title in 2016 and doesn't have a reason to join.
There we go.
The super team.
Sam's thrilled.
Okay, this is. Bear with me, but it kind of hinges upon that earlier Iguodala deal to the Warriors. So in real life, the Warriors acquire Iguodala, but it was mainly through like a cap clearing move. They got rid of that. Of course, the Biedrins deal that I made doesn't actually go down, but they get rid of Biedrins, Richard Jefferson, and Brandon Rush, clearing almost $40 million of cap room on the books for that year, and bringing Iguodala from Denver. In the timeline I've created, though, the Warriors make that trade, and they not only get back Mo Harkless, but that also means that year they don't draft Harrison Barnes, who was, like, really maligned, if you remember, in that 2016 finals against the Cavs, but had, you know, been... There had been murmurings of him being the weak link on that 73-win team anyway. In the reality that I create, Mo Harkless is, I think, or not I think, Mo Harkless is, as he is in real life, 6'9", and a better defender than Harrison Barnes. And I have in that game
You know, we should do a future basketball court that's just like what if Hakeem Olajuwon was 4 inches shorter?
Which, yeah, which is not as tall.
Yeah.
The genetics.
What if Muggsy Bogues was 5'9"?
Yeah, what if?
What if Russell Westbrook was 7'3"?
Well,
then he'd be... How tall is Giannis?
Injured a lot.
Hey. Trust the process.
But anyway, I have Mo Harkless doing like a really good job against Durant because of his length, because of his size and athleticism. And instead of this hole for defense that Harrison Barnes ended up being for the Warriors, you have this like young upstart defender, kind of the perfect model. He's not really a 3-and-D guy in real life, but kind of a perfect model defender, a wing defender that the Warriors end up getting on the cheap. But they end up losing that 2016 Game 7 anyway, because, of course, this is the same Warriors team that would have had Dwight Howard on it. Dwight Howard is notorious for being unreliable in big games. I don't think this would have been any different. I have him making a costly error that sends Russell Westbrook to the line late in the game's closing moments to ice the game for the Thunder. So you have this situation where Durant ends up dethroning the Warriors. They go on and I have them beating Cleveland in 2016. There's never the impetus for him to leave. He stays in Oklahoma. This is his first title, because I still have him losing the title against the Heat in, what was that, 2012. Number three, we never get the gif of Kobe Bryant calling Dwight soft in the middle of the game that they would have played after Dwight left the Lakers. I also was thinking about this too. I think you probably still have Kobe telling Jordan Clarkson to not go to the hole like a light-skinned dude, but I don't think that we know about it. And what I mean by that is, I think Dwight Howard spending time on the Lakers really brought out a sense of like comfort in Kobe with criticizing his teammates. And what I mean, and I want to.
Yeah, like, Kobe never had that problem before.
But if you notice, like the Jeremy Lin, in which I can't repeat here because it was profane.
Yeah.
The Jeremy Lin vine, the Mitch Kupchak yelling at Mitch Kupchak in practice, all that happened, those are post Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant moments. And I think, like, much like if you have had to care for a grandparent or an elderly person, as they get older and older in age, that filter becomes less and less of a thing. And I think,
so wait, you're saying like late era Kobe is like in hospice?
I don't think hospice. I don't think he's dying, but I think I think he's he is reaching a level of, you know, just like cantankerous NBA veteran who, like, yeah, here's this goofy big guy Dwight Howard that's making his life a little more difficult. He's going to be a little more vocal to the press about it. And yeah, even when Dwight leaves, he might do the same thing to this guy that goes to the hole like a light skin dude.
I love the idea that, like, playing with Dwight Howard is a bridge too far, but all of a sudden he's going to be playing with Josh Smith and be like, yes, this is what I need to revitalize my career and not make fun of Jordan Clarkson as he drives to the hole.
No, I don't think
the thesis is here.
Oh, I see what you're saying. I mean, no. I think Dwight Howard is a special level of... I mean, I think the... And here's the thing. Do you think that even if you have that same level of frustration that Kobe is going to step to Josh Smith the same way he'd step to Dwight Howard? I think everybody, even people who don't play in the league, and Dwight Howard is like 7 feet tall, 300 pounds, and there are a lot of people out here like, yeah, I could take Dwight Howard.
He's probably the least scary 7 foot tall person.
Right?
In
like,
America.
He's really goofy. And yeah. I think people
I could take
okay
Dwight
with...
Howard, but that's not the point.
See, that's what I'm... number four.
Yeah, let's wrap this up.
Kristaps is drafted by the Kings in 2015, not the Knicks, because Phil Jackson postponed his retirement from coaching after the Lakers get taken out by the Mavs in 2011.
That's before the trade.
This is before... Oh, wait. Am I not allowed
no,
to change
you
this?
You can't change this.
God damn it. All right. Forget this. That's it. Those are my ancillary effects.
Strike him from the record.
It is so
stricken.
It's so struck. And it is, you know, I sometimes... you are definitely supposed to lead with, like, the most important to the least important. And you've done a good job saving your least important
that.
Because you just... We're just going to cut it out and it's not going
to
make any difference.
I had this whole thing about how Boogie gets to... be paired up with John Wall in D.C., but it's fine.
Rest in peace, Boogie.
Yeah, that's... pour one out for Boogie.
Rest All in right. peace, Wizards.
Sam, you have some stuff to say, probably.
I do. So,
right.
I got a lot to say. I think it's interesting because Miles is mostly focusing on the Bynum and the Kobe angle, and I'm sort of focusing on the other halves of the trade. So, let's start with the New Jersey, soon-to-be Brooklyn Nets. If you remember, the summer of 2012 was a very pivotal one for the Nets. They started it off by giving Deron Williams a 5-year, $100 million extension, which is incredible.
That actually seems, like, made up.
The pick that they traded to the Portland Trailblazers for Gerald Wallace ended up becoming Damian Lillard.
Which is worse than
strike
the Deron
two.
Williams thing.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
And then strike three... Over July 4th weekend, they traded for Joe Johnson and his contract from the Atlanta Hawks. And so after the Joe Johnson trade, there were all these rumors that, like, now they had Joe Johnson and Deron Williams and, you know, Gerald Wallace in place, that now they were going to finally go through with this Dwight Howard trade that they've been talking about for a year. And apparently that week, Billy King offered the new Magic GM, Rob Hennigan, I think, he offered him Brook Lopez and 4 unprotected first-round picks, which is incredible because if you go back to just after the lockout ended, Billy King offered Orlando Brook Lopez and 2 unprotected first-round picks. The Magic said no. Then the next trade deadline, he said, okay, what about Brook Lopez and 3 unprotected first-round picks? They said no. So then this summer, he's like, okay, sure, 4, and they still said no.
This is the sort of hardball that Billy King was known for.
Yeah,
yes.
This is what I'm saying. I don't get why this would happen.
Because it's finally time. It's time to happen. It's going to happen. This is my
time. I do just want to before Sam goes on, in the brief that Sam's written, he wrote, I think it's a typo, the Mets offered new Magic GM Brook Lopez, which I actually think would be hilarious if Brook Lopez were the GM of the Magic.
Oh, no, no. There's supposed to be a "the" in there. They offered the new Magic GM, Brook Lopez.
No, the Nets offered Brook Lopez, new GM of the Magic, 4 unprotected first-round picks. What a great deal.
What a deal for Brook. So I'm going to say that this deal gets done. The Magic realizes it's time to blow it up. They're not getting a better offer anywhere else. So we still get the Nets hype as they move into Brooklyn, which, as fellow people who lived in New York in 2012, there was an odd amount of hype around that.
Yeah, that was real. I still remember going on Firing Line before the 2013 season and saying I thought the Nets were going to be surprisingly good.
How'd that turn out?
I think you laughed at me on the air.
That doesn't sound like Miles at all.
I think it was when former reporter and now video game general manager Lang Whitaker was in the room, and I don't think I've ever recovered.
That was a Lang episode?
Yeah, I think it was a Lang episode. Hey, Lang.
Video game general manager Lang Whitaker.
I don't know if... Here's the thing. I was trying not
to. There's got to be a better way to describe Lang.
Yeah, I was trying not to say that in a way that sounded pejorative, and unfortunately...
But that's what it is, right?
That's what it is.
It sounds like a cool job. Hire me.
I would move to Memphis. I mean,
me too.
Oh, I'd quit my job right now, and if he was like, yeah, just come do this, yeah, I'd be like, oh, absolutely.
I'm not even that good at 2K.
I would quit my job the second the Olympics are over and go to Memphis and play video games.
The Olympics, coming soon on NBC.
Yeah, and the NBC family of networks. Anyway, so we get... Here's where this trade really helps the Nets. We do get this really great East Final Four. We get the Heat and the Pacers, who ended up playing, I don't want to say a classic conference finals that year in real life, but a pretty good one. And we get a Knicks versus Nets playoff matchup, which is sort of what we were hoping for the whole regular season. And then the seeding didn't really work out. And then the Nets lost to the Bulls without Derrick Rose.
So who's on this Nets team that gets them a 3 seed in the East?
I think the Nets have Dwight and Wells. A 3 seed in the East. Darren Williams, Joe Johnson.
Yeah.
I think they were a 4 seed in real life. I think Dwight over Brooke gives them one spot.
Okay, that's fair.
Thanks, buddy. I also think that because the Nets go into the second round of the playoffs and do well, that maybe even the conference finals, who knows, that Dwight re-signs with the Nets instead of what actually happened, where he went to the Lakers and was just miserable and sort of the scapegoat for the entire season and then left. So I think he sticks around with a big contract to stay in Brooklyn, New York. Let's go to the Sixers. They don't make a Bynum deal. They don't really have a young superstar. The Sixers give it another go.
That's pretty insulting to Evan Turner.
Well, I mentioned Evan Turner here. They give it another go with Giroux, Iguodala, Vooch, and they do fine, but it's clear that like the rest of the East, those four teams I just mentioned, are way better than them. So the Sixers decide to blow it up because Iguodala is a free agent at the end of this offseason. They send him to Memphis for Rudy Gay, who has 2 years plus an option left on his deal, and a first-round pick. So this is instead of Rudy Gay going from Memphis to Toronto. So Iguodala is already a great defender. We know this. He fits really well with Memphis' style, with Gasol and Randolph and Tony Allen and Conley, the whole grit and grind deal. And just like in reality in the 2013 season, Memphis gets to the conference finals, except they don't get swept by the Spurs. They take them to, let's say, a hard-fought 6 games before they bow out. And then because of the success of the Grizzlies and Iguodala really buys into the culture, the Grizzlies overpay a little bit to keep their aging core together. They give Iggy a 4-year, $55 million contract, which means there is no death lineup in Golden State. And so the Warriors just have to focus their cap space around Steph, Clay, Harrison Barnes, David Lee, and Draymond Green, who they draft that year.
All right, so we moved the pieces around. What are the big takeaways?
The biggest takeaway, I think, is that LeBron is able to firmly establish himself as the greatest basketball player ever.
If he hasn't done so in this timeline.
If he hasn't done so in our odd actual timeline. So he still beats the Spurs in 2013. I don't think anything really happens that would cause him to lose to the Spurs or for the Spurs to not make the finals the next year, even with this super defensive Memphis squad, and maybe the Thunder, something good happens to them in the playoffs, whatever. But you go to 2015, there's no Iguodala on the Warriors for Steve Kerr to move into the starting lineup. That team is also just not as deep. So LeBron, despite the Cavs missing Kyrie, missing Kevin Love, they are able to defeat a very strong Warriors squad in the finals, which is really just an all-time finals performance. It already was, even though the Cavs lost that series in real life. Then the next year, Miles sort of mentioned this in his brief, there's no Iguodala to slow down KD in the Western Conference Finals. And even though he did a really good job of missing enough shots on his own, uncontested ones, I might add, to cost the Thunder Game 6 of that series, I'm going to put the Thunder through to another finals. But I'm going to say that the Cavs still beat that Thunder team in 7 games to win a second straight title in Cleveland for LeBron. But then we move forward to the next offseason, the very fateful July 4th, 2016, where Kevin Durant sees that maybe even at his best, he's not going to be able to beat LeBron with this Thunder squad, but he sees an opening with this hungry young team in Golden State, who they just got past in the conference finals, and a team with plenty of cap room because they don't have Iguodala's contract tying up what might have been the last little speck. So KD goes to the Warriors in this timeline. Very sad. Same tidings.
But so this is one of the rare basketball court timelines where in your timeline, the Thunder do not win the title.
That's correct.
Sad.
But they did win in Miles's, so we're keeping the streak alive.
All right, what else goes down?
The Lakers are the Nets. What do I mean by that? They hold on to Bynum. Eventually he gets hurt. They are not able to trade him for anything. And because they already pulled off that horrible Steve Nash deal earlier in the offseason, they don't really have any future draft picks. They're basically in the same spot they are now, except Kobe has somehow a more depressing retirement tour. The Warriors dynasty doesn't really happen because there's no ring for them in 2015 because there's no Iguodala, who was the finals MVP, of course. We do miss out on the LeBron chase down block, which is his signature moment, I think, as an NBA player in 2016. But they still get KD, and now with KD and Harrison Barnes, they still are able to play this sort of death lineup deal, and they're able to win their first finals with Steph and Clay and that crew in 2017. The even bigger takeaways, no ring for the Thunder, but maybe, this is a maybe, that getting to the finals could have kept KD around and caused him to start that super team with Al Horford that was rumored that summer. After all, Iguodala was part of that Hamptons crew that was able to convince Kevin to go to Golden State. And if he's not in Golden State, then who knows, maybe Durant sticks around with the Thunder.
There's no process
in Philadelphia.
We all know that Al Horford should have been an all-star starter if you listen to certain certain segments of the sports media. So,
can I also ask, you said there's no death lineup. Does that mean that Draymond ever becomes as prominent on the team as he is now, or does that never happen either?
Yeah, I think so, just because I still think that Mark Jackson gets fired and Steve Kerr takes over for him. And I think Kerr was really the one to unleash him as a starter in the first place. There's no process in Philly, which is going to make the Philadelphia fans very sad. There's no Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast, and if there is, it has a different name, which is important.
Well, wait, when do Ricky Sanchez's rights get moved?
In real life?
Well, yeah, I mean, like, when, like...
I thought that was a hinky move.
It might have been a hinky move, because I know the podcast started, like, right around the Jrue Holiday trade, so I think it's correct that, you know, without excitement around the Jrue Holiday trade, we might not have seen the RTRS folks, but I'm curious as to, you know, if someone had figured out a way to move the rights to Ricky Sanchez around the actual rights, then maybe they would have won, but no one did. So I do have a second question about the Sixers, though, which is where do you see the, you know, where does Joel Embiid end up, and what happens to him?
So here's what I think with the Sixers, that they're still trying to put together a win-now team with Gay and Holiday and you know, they have two first round picks that season with the pick from Memphis, which isn't a high pick, but whatever. So I think that they can't really commit to a rebuild until Holiday and Gay are expiring, which would be 2015. So the Sixers miss out on the Embiid draft, but they're able to tank super hard in 2015, which they did in real life. But instead of getting the 3 pick, let's say that somehow they're able to actually win the lottery that first season, because maybe with no Hinkie there, that the league is not rigging the lottery against the Sixers, which I think might have happened, potentially. So Philadelphia gets Karl Anthony Towns, Joel Embiid in the 2014 draft. I'm going to say that not every team would have been so hyped to take a chance on him as early as the Sixers did, and he falls a little bit down to maybe the 7 or 8 spot, which is where the Los Angeles Lakers are waiting to really try to snap up their cornerstone 5 that they weren't able to get with Dwight Howard. They hadn't really had since Shaq, and all the other better bigs are off the board, and so they want to roll the dice, and we have Joel Embiid much closer to Rihanna drinking Shirley Temples in Philadelphia. Not in Philadelphia, but in Los Angeles instead.
I can't help but think that that would have been a terrible environment for Joel Embiid.
I think it would have been maybe the worst environment for Embiid to be on the bench with a season of almost retiring Kobe Bryant just giving him endless shit.
In Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles, yeah. Could not probably have picked a worse spot, but I think that's something the Lakers would have gone for because they're the Lakers. Let's go back to the Nets because that's what everyone really wants to know about.
Of course.
So the Nets do not make the KG and Pierce deal because they gave up all their future first for Dwight. So the Magic end up big winners instead of the Celtics when Darren ends up cratering, Dwight's back is a mess as it is now, and they have 4 unprotected firsts, they have a very movable contract in Brook Lopez. So maybe, instead of trusting the process, we all end up believing in Magic.
Okay, he should lose for that.
See what I did there, everybody? You see what I did?
He should lose for
that. I gotta say, that's right on the verge of an automatic disqualification.
But I did hear some chuckles on the other end of the line, so I'm counting it as a slight victory. Anyway, so
don't
the Magic
make, don't make me call that contempt of court.
Okay, so but in all seriousness, the Magic have a ton of unprotected firsts from a bad team. They do not end up giving Philly back that first round pick that would end up being Saric in that weird deal that I still don't really get why the Magic made it.
They wanted Elfrid Payton.
That's the same
thing for all the Magic deals the last 2 years.
They don't make any sense. Also, make sure you're pronouncing it's
Saric.
Saric.
Come on, Mark Zumoff doesn't break his lisp every single game pronouncing it that way for nothing. So,
The Magic are building a stealth contender. The Celtics are not. The Nets are bad. The Knicks fall apart. Maybe it's some sort of like Magic Cavs battle for the East, which TNT and ESPN hate ratings wise, but I sort of think that's where the league is looking if this Bynum trade never goes down.
All right. Well, good stuff from both of you guys. And now I will pick a winner, as per usual, using totally arbitrary criteria. And that is I'm basically deciding who the winner is based on whose scenario for the Sixers do I like more. And I...
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I'm not totally convinced that that Sam's is actually better because, maybe they get Towns, but maybe they just draft Okafor again, and that's, you know, a nightmare, especially if they never get Hinkie, you know.
He's the biggest winner in all of this, by the way.
Well, Hinkie probably gets to go to a... Yeah, he'll go to a different team that might... I mean, there's some
like the Magic.
Yeah, he'll be the one. He'll be the one pulling reverse deals for Saric. I mean, there is some argument that the Sixers were actually the best possible spot for Hinkie because they actually did let him ruin the team for 3 years. I mean, I thought it was great, obviously, but
were you in on?
I've always been in on the process. Okay. I actually remember I was walking back to school on. I was at like 109th in Amsterdam. I looked at my phone. I saw the Jrue Holiday trade went down. And I was like...
That's right by my apartment.
Shit. I was like, oh shit, we got Nerlens. Don't tell the people where you live, Sam. I was like, oh shit, we got Nerlens. and we only had to give up a first-round pick to do it. And then there was another tweet that came in that was like, no, the Sixers are getting a first-round pick. And I was like, all right, this is great. I'm 100% in on this new guy. But I think there is some, you know, the Sixers owners were very in on the process until they weren't. And that was, you know, Adam Silver and the Colangelos doing their snake-like behavior. Anyway, I'm sort of monologuing here. But so all that is to say is I think the Sixers today are actually in better shape under Miles' timeline, because I actually kind of think Vucevic Drummond is kind of a weirdo team that you could build something around, especially because Vucevic is such a great shooter, and then you've got interior defense on top of that. So, Miles, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're the winner of basketball court this week.
It feels good to be back on top in my rightful position.
Sam, sorry.
That's okay. I figured this was going to be a battle to make the Sixers fan in the room happy, and I just could not find a path to do it.
Oh, goodness. Let me just say, this all stems from whether you believe that there was something real beyond the Magic just not wanting for 4 first-round draft picks. If you believed that at face value they were like, oh, no, it's not that appealing, then Sam's timeline makes more sense. If not, hop on down the Andres Biedrins and Monte Ellis train.
Yeah, I think the
rights to Andres Biedrins.
The other podcast. Reason I like Miles' podcast. Yeah, the reason I like Miles' timeline is because I didn't know who Andres Biedrins was until today, and now I know. So
wait. Before we cut this off.
Yeah, yeah.
Do I just have to like throw in a random like mid-2000s NBA player into my timeline next episode?
No, like, so oh. the other
hey,
thing,
you remember Chucky Atkins? Anyway, I win
do
now.
Remember Chucky Atkins.
The other thing, Sam, you need to know is that I've found that it is much more difficult to rule against Miles when he's sitting next to me. It's just something like there's something about it that makes it harder.
I'm gonna fly out for the next episode.
Yeah,
it's really lovable. We should have a live. I mean, I guess all of them are live, but we should have a.
Yeah, we'll go to where did we watch the draft lottery together a few years ago when we all still lived in New York? Was that it? Was it Shorty's?
It was at
Philly bar downtown.
Yeah, Shorty's.
Yeah,
Shorty's is great. If you live in New York and want a cheesesteak, Shorty's.
I just went to. Oh, but it was in L.A. Never mind.
Yeah, L.A. is kind of a different.
Yeah,
different
spot,
city, right? Miles.
Yep.
Yeah. So, live episode of Basketball Court at Shorty's, TBD. So that'll do it.
Wait. One last thing.
Oh, okay.
Since we picked the Bynum episode because Philly football is going to the Super Bowl.
Oh yeah. Go Eagles!
Congratulations to the judge for his team making the Super Bowl. Should we do Super Bowl picks or should we do that? Can we just add those in post?
What are we adding?
Super Bowl picks.
Is it who we want to win or who we think is going to win?
Who's going
to
win? But I'm going to record mine after the game's over and have Peter upload the episode on Monday.
No. All I know is I'm not making a pick on the record because I believe too much in like superstition and stuff. But it's going to be exciting. I'm going back to Philly for the Super Bowl. And I'm worried that I won't be able to fly back one way or another because the amount of destruction that will be wrought on the city of Philadelphia one way or another.
Yeah,
I'm excited for it.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to be able to leave for a couple of weeks no matter what happens.
Look, nothing brings the city together more than the Eagles, for good or for bad. All right, and with that, let's wrap up. So Twitter is at B-Ball Court Pod, Facebook, Basketball Court Podcast. If you're listening to this, you probably know where we are on iTunes, so that's some good stuff. Leave us a review, subscribe. Then, you know, one thing I've heard is that you can unsubscribe immediately and then, like, resubscribe. And by doing that, like, that counts as 2 subscribed. So consider,
definitely do that.
Yeah, consider, like, unsubscribing and then, like, 5 minutes later resubscribing just to, like, keep bumping our numbers up. The iTunes rankings.
We're the only podcast that will tell you to unsubscribe. So trust us.
So we'll be back eventually. Sam's got to do the Olympics for the NBC family of networks.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Those are coming up soon, I think.
Yeah. I heard they're taking place in Bolivia this year.
That's not true, and you know it.
Yeah, so they're in Pyeongchang?
Yeah. And Thursday the 8th,
yeah,
be sure
was,
to go to
lowconfidenceolympics.com
and click all the videos because some of them might be mine.
Well, with that excellent suggestion, we'll wrap up. So, Sam, thanks as always.
Oh, thank you. Looking forward to the next one when I can reclaim my belt.
Yeah, make sure you FedEx the belt to Miles.
Please send that to me.
Miles, congrats on the victory.
Thank you. Go Wizards.
And, yeah, go Birds. I'm Judge Peter Andrews. Court's adjourned. All right, so I'm going to do the 1, 2, 3 thing again, and then I'm going to stop recording. All right, so 1, 2, 3, stop.